Welcome to Speak a Dogcast. My name is David Farb, Animal Behavior Specialist, and I'm broadcasting from WOUF Wolf Studios in beautiful Palm City, Florida. Thank you so much for joining me again today. If you haven't clicked that subscribe or that follow button, do so right now. New episodes come out every Wednesday, and you're going to want to check them out. Now, you can also follow me on Instagram at Speak a Dogcast, and be sure you join me there every single Tuesday for Training Tip Tuesday, where I give you guys a brand new dog training tip every single week. If the visual thing is more your thing, you can subscribe to my YouTube channel. Yes, go find me over there. And if you'd like to support the show even further, become a patron of the show today. Patreon.com/speakadogcast. If you love the show, if you love the podcast, if you love what you're hearing, do me a favor. Take a moment, scroll on down, my Apple Podcast users, Spotify users, give me that 5-star rating or leave me a review. I'd really appreciate it. And if you're on the YouTube page, click that thumbs up if you like what you're seeing. Yes. Now on today's show, anxiety and your dog. Yes, not the happiest subject always, but the happy thing is we can get your dog over anxiety issues, over anxiety problems. We'll talk more about that today, in today's segment. Then we have a segment on little dog syndrome. Maybe you have a little dog with little dog syndrome. We'll talk a little bit about that. Then comes the history of Animal Mascots 101 and the listener Q&A. If you have any questions for the listener Q&A, you can email me questions@speakadogcast.com or message me on social media. Yes, any dog training, animal training questions, send them on over my way. Your question could get featured on the podcast. Yes. Now, before we get going with today's show, I have to give you that trivia question. Today's question is going to be, what physical feature do monkeys have that apes do not? Yes, what physical feature do monkeys have that apes do not? I will give you the answer to that question somewhere in today's show, so be sure you stick around. Sit, stay, and enjoy the podcast. Next on Speak a Dogcast, anxiety and your dog. Now, there are all kinds of anxiety out there, anxieties out there. Of course, the most common one that you hear about with dog training is going to be separation anxiety. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about anxiety, some of the root causes, how we solve it, maybe some of the solutions you shouldn't be doing, right? And look, anxiety is one of those things where, first of all, the term anxiety is sort of a blanket generalized term. Anxiety can represent a lot of different things. I mean, if we think about it, being excited is a form of anxiety. And when we look at the physiological factors, like when we look at anxiety of being excited, it's maybe heavier breathing, a little sweating. They almost mimic the same thing as fear, being scared. You know, they're the same physiological responses. And so when we talk about anxiety, we kind of have this blanket term for anxiety. Now, we're going to be specifically talking about more of the fear side of anxiety today, the separation anxiety, that kind of stuff when it comes to dog training. Now, the thing with anxiety in dogs is most people want the quick fix. And I'm here to tell you, there's no such thing. There's no such thing as a quick fix when it comes to anxiety in your dogs. And even just a couple episodes ago, right? There's no quick fixes in dog training, guys. There's just not. I can hear it already. David, what about medication? Ah, there it is. What about medicating the hell out of our dogs? What about making our dogs into zombies? What about not taking the time to train our dogs properly? What do you think I think of that? All right, I'm being smart. But yeah, guys, look, I'm not a fan of the anxiety meds for dogs. I'm really not, for a multitude of reasons. Look, number one, you'll discover, if you're going to go that route, you'll probably find that it's going to take anywhere from 6 to 12 different medications to find the one that actually works. And you have any idea how much time and money it takes to wean a dog off and on a med and then wean a dog off, wean a dog on, wean a dog off a med. And again, how many of these may not even work when you could just call a trainer, read some information, listen to a podcast, put time and effort and consistency into your dog, and you might actually see a result. I know, crazy thought. I'm a little old school like that. What can I say? I mean, we've had dogs around for thousands and 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 thousands of years without anxiety meds. And somehow, I mean, I don't know how, some crazy way we figured out how to make it work, right? Like, really weird. I don't know. How could we have possibly done that without medications, guys? Oh my gosh. It's called exercise. It's called stimulation. It's called purpose, drive. I don't know. Boundaries, rules, discipline. Call me old fashioned, but we figured out how to do this a long time ago without any medications. So you'll have to excuse me, veterinarians and vet techs, if I don't think medication is necessary vast majority of the time when it comes to dogs and anxiety. I think I've made the recommendation one time in 15 years, one time to put a dog on anxiety meds. And even then it was as a temporary means to get to the end. And it was because of a particular scenario. We don't even need to get into that today. I mean, it was whatever. Okay. One time. And do you know how many anxious dogs I have seen over the... Look, if you really want to get into it, I think most dogs have a little bit of anxiety to some degree. And the biggest reason why is they don't have a purpose. We're not stimulating them. We're not giving them a job. We're not giving them a reason to be a dog. And so we get these issues that come up. What we end up getting is displacements, right? So if we have a dog that has too much energy, too much frustration, too much all these things, they're going to want to displace those energies, if you will, those in some way, those instinctual needs. They're going to want to displace them in some way. And that's going to come out in biting, chewing, growling, protective over an owner, screaming and whining when the owner's gone, right? All these different ways it can displace and sort of give itself a face in a different face of anxiety. So here's the thing, guys. You don't need meds, right? Okay, so how do we go about solving it? We'll get there. We're going to get there. But what I want to say is it's a process. Solving anxiety is definitely a process. It is not this overnight thing. I'm going to reiterate that. People do not have enough patience. I just read the other day that a big rescue in our area had someone returned. I think I already talked about this. Someone returned a dog because the dog had the, quote, zoomies. I'm like, are you guys kidding me? Did you not try walking the dog, taking it out and throwing a tennis ball with it, going for a swim? I don't know. Doggy day camps? Like, call me nuts. Did you try stimulating the dog? Because that dog was literally saying, give me something to do, give me something to do, give me something to do, spin, 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 give me something to do, give me something to do, zoom, 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 give me something to do, give me something to do. And no one's giving the damn dog something to do. And gee, we wonder why the dog won't calm down. So we talk about separation anxiety. We talk about anxiety in a dog. I hate to say it, guys, but one of the biggest ways we can go about solving it, and a lot of times one of the root causes of it, is lack of exercise and lack of stimulation. You know, two scenarios, right? Same thing. I've got two scenarios. I've got two different dogs. Both of these dogs have separation anxiety. One of them is 5 years old and was raised by an owner since it was 8 weeks old. And the other one is 5 years old and is a rescue and is God only knows where it's been. And we, you know, we don't know its story. And both have the same problems though. Let me ask you guys something. Do you think one of those scenarios was more preventable than the other? Because the answer is straight up yes. Here's the other hard part of anxiety issues. I have to look at an owner and go, you've had this dog since it's 8 weeks old. It's now 5 years old and it has severe anxiety issues. Do you think that was just chance? The answer is no, guys. It's not just chance. Unfortunately, that owner did or didn't do something that created this anxiety in this dog. And I've seen this scenario too many times. Owners are usually a huge cause of their dog's anxiety. Quick story for you. I've told it once before. Loved my grandmother to death. She was an incredible woman, guys, like right off the bat. My grandmother was amazing. She was strong. She was just an unbelievable lady. And it's been a little over 20 years since she passed away. So I think it's been enough time that I can say this story. But look, my grandmother, bless her heart, she loved her dogs. Boy, did she love her dogs. And I didn't mean that in the Southern way of bless your heart. But she loved her dogs, man. And she had this one dog who had such bad separation anxiety, guys. And anytime my grandmother would go to leave, she'd have to sit down in this chair with this dog before she left. And the dog would jump up on the chair because she knew she was leaving. She'd be grabbing her keys. The dog would start pacing, whining, going nuts. It would jump up in the chair. My grandmother would have to sit down next to the dog and pet it and go, it's okay. I'll be back. Up, up, up. As if the dog could understand her. And look, even young 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old David, myself, even I knew that was wrong. like, I'm not going to tell my grandmother at that time, but like, I'm sitting here going, geez, like, she's not going to, she doesn't know you're, she doesn't understand English. Like, you're just making it worse. Clearly. It's amazing how you look back at your childhood and you like can see some things where it's like, wow, crystal clear. I could be training dogs as an adult. You know, like I had an eye for it. I had a gift. It was awesome. Not awesome that my grandmother made this dog anxious. You know, the dog had a lot of issues. I mean, it did. It's a sweet dog, but man, she had some issues. You know, and I know my grandmother had that dog since it was a small puppy. She created those issues, guys. Whether I like that or not doesn't change the fact that my grandmother did that. Again, loved my grandmother. She was absolutely an incredible lady. Like, y'all don't even know what an amazing woman she was. So, all right, we'll leave it at that. So if you don't want to give your dogs anxiety, guys, you have to be a source of strength. So, David, how do we walk out the door properly? What if my dog is anxious? Now, the first thing, guys, if your dog is anxious when you leave, you need to have a crate. We need to go back to a crate. If your dog's out of the crate, you got to get him back in a crate. It's that simple. We're not talking about how to acclimate your dog to a crate today. Got plenty of segments on that, so we're not going to waste time on that today. Not waste time, you know what I mean. It's very important information. All right, but definitely go check out crating episodes if you're unsure how to acclimate your dog to the crate. Because the reality is you have to have some form of boundary when you leave the home. The crate is one of the best ways to create that physical boundary, that discipline, if you will, when you're not there. Okay. Now, once we start working away from a crate, if we want to start getting our dog out of the crate with, you know, working on anxiety and separation anxiety, they've been doing really well in the crate. Let's say that's awesome. I like to work a spot command, you know, throwing it out there. When my dog was younger, Riker, he came to us with a little bit of whining in the crate when we first got him. Now, he was a little small puppy. We nicked that pretty quick. But then when I started to leave, I wouldn't say he was anxious. Right. He was a little bit anxious. He was a puppy. He was learning. We went through a phase of very small amounts of separation anxiety with me. And so when I left, my wife would redirect. But what happened if we were both leaving and we wanted to leave him out of the crate? We created a spot command. Now, the spot is like a dog bed, right? Go to your spot command. We've talked about this a few times on the podcast as well, but we ended up having sort of an extension of the spot as our bed being the spot. Now, it ended up just kind of happening this way. We had construction going on in our house at one point, and we were in the master bedroom a lot with the dogs. And it was sort of like we would put them on the bed and say, stay, so we could go deal with the construction people, talk to the contractors, teaching them not to bark. And we ended up kind of just utilizing the bed as the spot command. And inadvertently kind of became the spot, which was fine. No big deal. And so when we left the house, we created that as a relaxation place. Hey, go up on the bed, lie down, stay. We'd leave. I don't make it a big deal. I don't talk to them. I don't coddle them. You notice I say, hey, go to your spot. Good. Stay. Leave. That's it. I'm gone. I don't look at them. I don't say another thing. That's the end of it. And sure enough, even with the camera on and everything, we'd come back, guys. He'd still be on the bed. 2-3 hours later, he wouldn't have moved. He would have just fallen asleep on our bed because we created and reinforced that place as a relaxation place. We utilized the spot other times when we were home to say, go lie down and show him it's a place of safety, a place of relaxation. And that way, when we left, it was an extension. We do the same thing with the crate. That's what the crate starts as. And then we graduate them from the crate, get them on a spot or something like that to create that same mentality of relaxation and no anxiety. That's how we get our dogs past separation anxiety at the house. That's how we're able to leave them. Look, part of it is, and again, it's one thing if it's a small puppy and it's separation anxiety versus an adult. The reason being is, look, when we do have an adult dog, mentally mature dog, the pack, the instinct kicks in and they understand that the leader is allowed to walk away from the pack, but the pack is not allowed to walk away from the leader. And that's why when we get dogs that are adult dogs that shred the house and really lose it when their owners leave, it's not just how you're leaving and everything, not just crating. There's more to it than that. There's a leadership position, a leadership quality missing in your dog's, your relationship. All right, that's the truth of it. And that's why not always you'll find, I know there's people out there probably listening to this going, David, I've read everything about separation anxiety. I've tried the crate. I've tried this. You're probably missing that leadership aspect. And that's where you're probably not walking your dog correctly, feeding your dog correctly. All of these other things add up to whether your dog is going to have anxiety or not. Look, the thing with dog training is it's not one of these things where you get to pick and choose what you want to do. Like, you're either the leader of your dog or you're not. You're either in control of your dog or you're not. Like, sure, there's like a, don't get me wrong, there's some in between, but at the end of the day, that's what it's about. Your dog either looks at you as a source of leadership or they don't. And that's where the vast majority of our separation anxiety starts. Now, the other side of it is exercise, guys. I can't even stress this one enough. I don't care what kind of anxiety your dog is having. If you aren't doubling, tripling, quadrupling your exercise, depending upon your breed, size, how much exercise you're already doing. But if you're not increasing the amount of exercise with your dog, if your dog has anxiety issues, you're doing yourself a disservice. Dogs that have energy to be anxious will continue to be anxious. I mean, like, repeat that in your head, guys. Dogs that have energy to be anxious will continue to be anxious. Like, it's just the truth. You've got to get those energy levels down. Look, at the very beginning, as I said it, a lot of times these anxiety issues, whether they're anything from being possessive over a person to separation anxiety to whatever, you know, whatever the case may be, toward anxiety toward strange dogs, right? Like, so many different things we could say here. But if you started exercising your dog properly, I can guarantee you all of these things would go away. Well, excuse me, let me see, start to go away. It's a part of the process. I didn't say that right, and that wasn't fair. There is no magic fix, guys, but the exercise is such a huge component of it. I cannot stress this enough. I really can't. So when we talk about solving these anxiety issues, the first thing we have to do is not medicate our dogs. All right, that's the very first thing. The second thing we've got to do is up the amount of exercise and stimulation we're giving our dogs. Yes, that is playtime, but it's walks, it's structure, it's rules, it's boundaries. Exercise is not just physical, guys. It's mental as well. I talk about the walks ad nauseum on this show. Walks are 85% mental, 15% physical. So a lot of these times, these anxiety issues, where are they? They're up here. So they're in the brain. And yeah, we can get the physical side out, but if we don't fix the mental side, nothing's coming with that. So we're going to fix the mental side starting with the physical side, but then we have to go to the mental side by actually addressing these issues. Actually putting our dog in these anxious scenarios and teaching them not to be anxious, just like we talked about with the crate. Look, if a dog gets anxious in the crate, you open the crate, you tell them no, give them a touch correction, close the door and walk away. We have to be giving them the information saying being anxious is not okay. I am not reading. You're not, hey, it's okay. No. Your dog's, look, if your dog is separation anxiety and you go, it's not okay, it's okay, it's okay. If you do that to your dog, you're just giving them exactly what they want, your attention and affection. It's not going to help. It's only going to increase and reinforce that anxiety. All right. So again, starts with no meds. Then we start with exercise, rules, boundaries, discipline, all that good stuff. Then we actually have to work through the particular issues we're having with our dog, whether that be separation anxiety, whether that be anxiety with other dogs or people or whatever the issue is. We have to actively work through these issues, actively train them, actively and consistently tackle these things daily, weekly, whatever the case may be. But separation anxiety and anxiety in general is not something that just magically goes away with your dogs, guys. It's not. It takes rules. It takes time. It takes hard work. Okay. So again, think about everything that goes into it. But the biggest thing I'm going to stress when it comes to anxiety is exercise, 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 exercise. Make sure you're exercising your dog enough. Make sure you're the leader of your dog and you're providing that leadership role. And you can be tackling all these anxiety issues with your dog in no time. Are you tired of your dog barking all the time? Or maybe you want them to stop jumping on people when they come over? Or does your dog take you for a walk instead of the other way around? Well, we can help. At The Nature of Training and Speak a Dogcast, we are committed to improving the relationships and lives people have with their pets. No matter what behavioral issue you are experiencing, from an unruly puppy to more severe issues, we can help. Our virtual training programs are catered to you and your pet and create a training plan that gets results. For more information, you can check out our website at www.thenatureoftraining.com or find us on Facebook or Instagram at Speak a Dogcast. With the ability to connect, teach, and train with pet owners around the world, together we can make a better home for our furry friends. The Nature of Training and Speak a Dogcast, helping you achieve success with your pet. Thank you. next on Speaking Dogcast, Little Dog Syndrome. Yes, it's LDS, not Latter-day Saints, but Little Dog Syndrome. Yeah, that's kind of always my joke with little dogs. But Little Dog Syndrome is a very real thing. It's a very, very, very real thing, and it's very, very preventable. Yes, it is the owner. It's all on the owner. Yeah, don't we all treat little dogs different? I don't. Let's make the clarifying point right there. I don't treat little dogs different, but everybody out there does, don't they? Oh, but David, they're little. We're going to hurt their little feelings, and we don't want to worry about their little thoughts and the little things and the little feet and the little this and the little. And well, yes, 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 physically correct. We're not exactly going to put a tiny chihuahua into a giant group of big dogs and, you know, okay. Yes, there are the obvious differences between big dogs and little dogs. However, between the eyes, between the ears, behind the eyes, that's a nose, behind the eyes, between the ears, a little dyslexia settling in there, they're the same damn thing as an 80-pound dog. You heard me correctly, guys. The little Chihuahua Pomeranian, the little tiny Min Pin you see, all these little dogs mentally are no different than a 100-pound dog, a 150-pound dog, a 30-pound dog, a 60-pound dog. You know why? Because there's this amazing three-letter word that they all are, and that's their dogs. Okay, that was a four-letter word because I put the S on the end. But they're they're all dogs. Why do we have to treat them differently? Guys, I have a Chihuahua of my own. I've had her for almost 9 years now, which is crazy to think about. We adopted her when she was, well, we don't know. We actually don't know how old Coco is. So, and she's awesome. She's the coolest little thing. She has hung out with a pack of big dogs every day that she has been in my home because when we adopted her, we just lost Fred. She never got to meet Fred, unfortunately. Fred was a very cool half lab, half St. Bernard, by the way. He was like 105 pounds and he was just a big sweetheart. God, I miss that dog. He was so cool. We adopted him later in life. We only had him for a handful of years. Anyway, getting back to it, we had Penny Lane, my half lab, half Great Dane. She was 92 pounds. We had Colby Jack, the golden retriever, who was about 80, 85 pounds. We had Lucky, who was a golden lab mix. He was about a 70, 75 pound dog. And we had just gotten Violet. There it is, who we still have. Oh, no, she's not in here. I turned around to look at her, and I was like, no, wait, she didn't come in the room. She's out in the family room. Anyway, Miss Violet, and she is about, what, 65, 70 pounds. So when we got Coco, all of these big dogs were already living with us. On top of that, I was running doggy day camps. I was doing boarding, boot camps. You know, we were already doing all these services. And so we had big dogs, little dogs, medium-sized dogs all coming in and out. And that was part of the thought process in getting Coco too, was we had all these big dogs. We need a little dog for the little dogs. And I had always kind of wanted another little dog. I had a Shih Tzu growing up. That's not that little. But funny thing is, and this is why we're getting to it. Funny thing is, my wife had never had a little dog. And for that matter, had never really been around many little dogs. All her friends that had dogs actually had big dogs. One of her best friends growing up had an Airedale. She herself had a 185-pound Newfoundland. Yeah, gigantic. So when I said, Jen, I got this little Chihuahua at this rescue that I want to bring home. And she's kind of like, look, I know we said little, but seriously? Like, I don't even know what to do with that. And so I actually had to kind of, I mean, in a way, teach my wife, like, hey, look, she's a dog just like all the other dogs. And she really saw it. She started to see, oh my gosh, like, yeah, she's a dog. I mean, not that that should be surprising, but it kind of is. Because again, as a society, we have this just preconceived notion that little dogs function differently than big dogs. And it's just not true. It's just not. Like, don't get me, yeah, sure, like Chihuahuas will shake a little bit. That's not just fear. It's not just being, well, a lot of times it's being cold, but sometimes it's a breed trait. They act a little different than big dogs, right? Part of it is breed. Part of it, and I think majority of it, is the nurture side. Not even I think. I know. We see it day in and day out. Look, guys, when you look at the bite list in a lot of your areas, and you look at dog bites that get reported, it depends, because right, it depends on if people report them. That's part of the problem. Little dogs bite more often than big dogs. That's really the point I'm getting at. Little dogs do bite people more often than big dogs. It just doesn't get reported as much. People think just because it's a little dog, we can just scoop it up and walk away. But I'm sitting here going, could you imagine if that was an 85-pound dog biting somebody? We wouldn't be okay with this. So why are we okay with it with the little dogs? little bit of a soapbox today, guys. You know what I mean? It's frustrating because I think little dogs get such a bad rap because of people. It's like it's the same kind of concept as a pit bull, right? They get a bad rap because of people. Well, so do Chihuahuas. So do Pomeranians. So do Min Pins. Those are the three that I think get a lot of it, right? Chihuahuas are known for being yappy. And I'm sure a lot of you out there going, David, I know a few Chihuahuas and every damn one of them is yappy. And guess what? It's probably because the owner allows it. I never thought about it that way, had you? It's probably because the owner allows it. Because a yap, yap, yap is not as obnoxious, well, depends on who you ask, as a bark, 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 woof, woof, woof. You know what I mean? The woof, woof, woof is going to carry of a big dog bark a lot more than a little dog. So we let these little dogs get away with everything. And it's not okay. You will discover if you really pay attention in your own life, like look around at people you know with dogs, you're going to see on the whole that little dogs do tend to be more anxious than big dogs. Like, hey, we're talking about anxiety today, aren't we? Anxiety in your dog was our first segment. Now we're talking about little dog syndrome. And so many little dogs have anxiety. Isn't that crazy? Like when you think about it, it's not the little dogs, guys. Like we all sit here and go, oh, little dogs are this and little dogs. We all play the stereotype, even dog owners, even responsible dog owners who would never play the stereotype game with a pit bull, right? Oh, you can't do that with pit bulls or German shepherds or Dobermans. You can't say all these stereotypical things about those breeds. But oh yeah, Chihuahuas are all yappy, right? Like they're all ankle biters. I mean, come on, guys, raise your hand. How many of you are guilty of it? You know you are. And unfortunately, you're just perpetuating this stereotype of little dog syndrome. It doesn't have to be this way, guys. Let's get our dogs out of the purses. Let's put them on the ground and make them walk on the four legs they were designed to walk on. Pugs. Oh my gosh. How many pugs do you see in strollers? Well, they're brachiocephalic. They can't breathe. Well, maybe if your pug lost 5 pounds, he might be able to breathe a little better. Call me crazy. Yeah, I know. Ooh, David's getting sassy today. Yeah, I am, guys. I've seen a lot of these pug videos on Instagram. Y'all know what I'm talking about. The talking pugs. Jesus. Oh, that gets me. That gets me, guys. The comment section on those where it's a dog being a dog. It's just a dog being cute. When people criticize, how dare they criticize that someone's letting their dog be like that? Oh, gosh. I am. All right. Come on. Don't talk about it. I won't get too much off on that today. But any of you, if you know, you know. Let's just say that. All right. Little dog syndrome drives me nuts, guys. It really does, because little dogs can be so awesome. Coco's phenomenal. Like when last time we went to the mountains, we took her with us and she went hiking with the big dogs and she loved it. We bought her a little doggy backpack because, yeah, I wasn't sure exactly how long we were going to go. And I'd never taken her hiking in the mountains before either. So I really wasn't sure how she'd do. Again, her age, she's getting older. I wasn't sure. She's got a little bit of arthritis, so we didn't want to push it. She kicked butt, man. She was having such a great time hiking around the mountains with the big dogs. And I used to love it when I took her. I mean, I still take her for walks, but a lot. I don't take her for the big, big ones like I used to. Because, yeah, she's got arthritis. She's got luxating patellas, so anyway. The point is, especially when she was younger and she used to be able to really hang with all the big guys, people would always give me crap. And people still do to this day, even when I take her for a walk. They're like, how does the poor little Chihuahua keep up? I'm like, guys, she's got more stamina than the big guys. Like, you don't even know. You don't even know. Come feel how muscly, like unless it's a fat, overweight Chihuahua, come feel how muscly Chihuahuas are, guys. They're built like little tanks. I mean, they really are. People treat them as if they're little fragile things, but they're really built like a tiny little solid tank. So we got to give little dogs more credit. We've got to put them down on the ground and let them walk. Stop putting them in your purse, ladies. They're dogs. Stop putting them in strollers. They're dogs. They have four legs. They are designed to walk better than you can. All right? So let's stop these stereotypes. Let's stop this ridiculous nonsense of treating little dogs like something they're not, because they're dogs at the end of the day. And once again, isn't that what makes them awesome? Dogs are dogs, guys. Treat them like what they are, big or small. The answer to today's trivia question, what physical feature do monkeys have that apes do not? It's a tail. Yes, monkeys have tails while apes do not. next on Speak a Dogcast, it's the history of animal mascots 101. Today, we'll be talking about the University of North Florida. The University of North Florida, or UNF, they were founded in 1965 in Jacksonville, Florida. Might be the newest university, right? Most of these we've done were formed like in the 1800s. Probably one of the newer universities we've talked about. Now, the school's campus is on 1,300 acres among a natural preserve on Jacksonville's south side. So, naturally, their mascot would reflect upon all the natural land surrounding the school. They are the UNF Ospreys. Yes, now the mascot was chosen in a poll conducted by the SGA in 1979. The Osprey received 47% of the votes, beating out a shark, a seagull, and a manatee. Now, some of the other early contenders, thank goodness they were not chosen, was the Mariners, the Tadpoles, the Coots, and the worst of all, the Pine Cones. I mean, really, could you imagine if your school was the Pine Cones? Now, there was some controversy on choosing the first mascot. When word got out that a seagull was being considered, some people were not happy, stating that the seagulls were often seen flying over dumps and therefore filthy birds. Now, there were even some local newspapers just trying to go ahead and declare the armadillo as the mascot. So one of the school's staff members decided to take it upon himself, and he used his own money to print up flyers to urge the students to write in the Osprey as the new mascot. His campaign worked, right? And the Osprey became the official mascot. Now, the male and female companions are named Ozzy and Harriet. Now look, guys, I am way too young to know this reference, but I do know the reference. I'm very proud of myself, and my parents would be very proud of me because they're the reason that I know the Ozzy and Harriet reference. Yes, guys. Now look, Ozzy and Harriet, for you younger listeners out there, it was originally a radio show, called a radio sitcom. Yes, guys, people before the days of television actually used to sit around a radio and listen to a sitcom on the radio. It's legitimately a thing. I know you don't believe me, but Google it. You can Google it. Okay. Now, again, guys, Ozzy and Harriet, it was called The Adventures of Ozzy and Harriet, and it was a radio show that developed into a TV show. Now, not animal related, but quick fun fact, the TV show Ozzy and Harriet, The Adventures of Ozzy and Harriet, was the longest-running live-action sitcom in U.S. television history until It's Always Sunny surpassed it on December 1st, 2021, although Ozzy and Harriet still retain the record in terms of total episodes produced at 435, whereas It's Always Sunny, well, they better get moving. They're sitting at only 170 episodes. Next on Speak a Dogcast, it's the listener Q&A. The first question today comes from Laura from Spain. Laura says, I have a 13-month-old golden retriever and she loves eating poop from other animals. I always tell her no when she does this, but it seems it's not working. What can I do? Love your podcast. Thank you so much, Laura. I have to say thank you for sending in the question. I think you are the first listener to send in a question from Spain, so that's just awesome and phenomenal. Thanks for listening in. Yeah, you know, it kind of depends. Well, not really depends, but it depends on how we're going to go about tackling this. Now, you're saying she's eating other animals' poop, so I'm going to maybe guess that you're out in like farmland area. Maybe she has access to horse poop, cow poop, whatever is out there. Maybe it's just other dogs that she's coming across. Either way, the first thing I got to ask you is, are you leashing up your dog, right? Like, if you're not leashing up your dog, I would definitely recommend putting a leash on her, because I know you could be out in the country somewhere. You may be wanting to give her some freedom, and I understand that. But the problem is you're not going to be able to really solve this very easily without leashing her up, right? We have to provide some kind of boundary, some kind of rule in this moment, and the leash is going to be an easy way to do it. Now, we can sort of evolve her off of like a regular 6-foot leash to like a training leash, 10, 20 foot leash. Sorry, I don't know the conversions for meters as I'm saying that. I'm going, wait a second, I don't know, feet, meters, sorry. We could work her up to a longer leash to try to give her that freedom to go after the poop, to teach her to leave it. But look, you need a pair of correction with this. I'll be honest, you know, the best way to do this is correct them. At the same time, we want to use a leave it command, right? Teach your dog a leave it command if she doesn't already know a leave it command. I want you to work on that at home with toys, with treats, teaching her to leave anything. Once you get a leave it really, really strong, because, you know, part of the problem is it's poop. It's very enticing. So we need this leave it to be very strong. And on top of that, I need my aversive, my correction to be strong enough that she doesn't want to go after the poop. Look, ideally, I don't want to have to make any harsh, strong corrections, but we do need to make a correction strong enough that she wants to work to avoid it. That's, again, why I like the martingale collar. If you've been a regular listener, you might be aware of the martingale collar, but if not, get a martingale collar on your dog. Make a correction when she goes after the poop. Say, leave it. Make the correction simultaneously. When she does leave it or redirect her focus back up toward you, you want to tell her, good girl, leave it, and reward it with a treat. If she goes to go after the poop immediately again, correct, leave it again. Okay? Look, poop is one of those things, animal poop. Some animal poop is very enticing to dogs. Horse poop is one of those where they really, really, really love it. It's taken a lot of work to get my dogs leaving horse poop here. And even every now and then, they still will try to sneak it from me because it's like crack to them. Okay. They've gotten really good at leaving it alone. Part of it is we have a fence for our pasture, and I've more been teaching them the boundary of don't go under the fence. And that helps us avoid them eating poop. They've been doing really great with it now though. Now if I'm out on a walk or something, same thing though. I'm going to have my dogs leashed up and I'm going to give them a leave it command. Now I've gotten to the point now where I can just tell my dogs, leave it. I don't need to correct it, and they will leave it alone. That's with enough practice and repetition. But again, the reality is you have to provide some form of correction, right? If we go back to it, what's the definition of corrections or aversives, the fancier word for it, if you will, anything an animal works to avoid. Your dog does not want to avoid the poop. They want the poop. So we have to give them a reason to avoid the poop, if that makes any sense. That's where that correction comes in. Then just as important, if not more important, you have to reward with a treat once she leaves the poop alone. Especially look at it from that perspective. She's eating something, poop. She's getting a food reward. She's actually getting like food reinforcement for that poop. So you need to have something equally as enticing, if not more enticing, to give her once she does leave the poop alone. One more side note with that treat is I'm thinking about it. If you can use an enticing treat, what I mean is something that's really stinky, really special, a treat you're only going to give her when she leaves poop alone. Look, if you want to cheat a little bit here, I don't have a problem with this, because to me, this isn't cheating. This is, we've got to look at, you know, what's the reward being given over here versus what's the reward being given over, you know, for leaving poop alone. Boil up some steak. Seriously, just boil up some steak. That way there's nothing, you know, you're not putting anything extra in it. Boil up a little bit of steak, cut it into little chunks, bring that with you on the walk. That's the only time she's going to get those in little tiny chunks. We're not talking a lot, right? Sparingly. Or chicken. You could also do it with chicken. One little side note with chicken, you can take vinegar and actually pour a little bit of vinegar into the boiled chicken, and it'll help tighten the chicken up so it doesn't shred as much into pieces. It'll come up better into little chunks. Laura, I know I'm like throwing tons of information at you. I'm sorry, my brain's just going right now, and I'm like going a million miles an hour. But the point is very simple. Let's break it back down for you. You want to leash up your dog on a nice 6-foot leash if you're not already doing that. You need to teach your dog a leave it command. Once you get out there, you're going to make a correction with that martingale collar, make a correction and say leave it simultaneously. When your dog does leave it, look up at you, anything like that, you got to reward them for leaving the poop alone. Okay. Look, it's going to take a little time and it's going to take a little repetition, but you've got to provide some reason for your dog to leave the poop alone. And then on top of that, some reward for leaving the poop alone that's really awesome, really special to that moment, that really entices her to want to leave that poop alone. So I hope that helps out, Laura. Let me know if you have any other questions. Next question. This comes from Taylor from Ontario, Canada. How about that? 2 out of the US today. I love it. Taylor says, my dog loves to jump on people. Doesn't matter if it's out in public or if we have people over, she always jumps. I tell her no and down, but it does not seem to be working. I don't mind her being excited to see people. I just don't want her jumping. Taylor, thank you for the question. You know, it's funny, actually, these, as I'm reading it now the second time, these questions are almost the same in a roundabout way. They really are. Like they're different rewards, but it's kind of the same scenario. Your dog has something you don't want them to do, right? They're displaying a behavior you really don't like. And well, Taylor, I can guess that when your dog jumps on most people, they probably reward it and reinforce it, right? Like, I know you don't want them to, but it's probably what they're doing. And no, it's okay. I don't mind the dog jumping on me, right? Like the classic one. It's like, well, that's fine, but I don't want my dog jumping on you. Like, I'm right there with you. But it's the same thing. Your dog is getting a reward out of it, right? On the other end that you don't want them to be. Her dog, you know, Laura's dog was getting poop. Your dog is getting praise and reward for jumping. So it's the same thing. You need to leash up your dog, right? If you're out on the walk, you're already doing that. Most likely your dog's already leashed up. No problem. You got to give her a little correction, redirect it. Once she stops jumping, did you say she, my dog? Yes, she. Once she stops jumping, you have to tell her, good girl, and give her a reward. Then we can try to redirect and come back toward the person she was jumping on. If she goes to jump again, correction, turn around. If she stops jumping, reward. Then we want to redirect and try to turn around again to that person. What we want to maybe do is ask your dog for a sit. If your dog sits, have the person she wants to say hi to give them a reward. Okay, that's an easy way to solve it when we're out in public, already on leash. When we're at home, it's a little different. We've got the doorbell ringing, I'm sure, right? More excitement. There's a little more chaos. You may not be bringing out the leash at home. That's my first suggestion. Leash up your dog when the doorbell rings, and you're going to create that same scenario that we do out in public, but within our house, right? Leash her up, approach the person. If she goes to jump, redirect, turn, walk away, or make a correction. Reward when she stops, rinse and repeat. If we can get her to a point that she's calm enough that she's willing to sit down in front of the person, we can have them reward that behavior. Okay, but it's going to be a little bit of a process. I would definitely recommend checking out some of my previous episodes on the front door, as well as go check out my Instagram page. We just did a front door Training Tip Tuesday. Training Tip Tuesday. So be sure you check out my Instagram, sort through some of those videos there. You'll find my Training Tip Tuesday on the front door and even more great information there. So peruse through to find out how to really break down the front door, because we'll be here all day for the Q&A. I don't stop talking. It's not good. All right. But definitely try to slow things down, leash your dog up, work on correcting it when she jumps and rewarding it when she doesn't. Try to keep it that simple. But what I'm hearing, you're telling her no, you're telling her down. I'm hearing she doesn't have an association with those words though. If she keeps jumping and you keep saying it, those words don't mean anything to her. You need to provide a correction and condition and pair a correction with the no, with the down. That way she understands, oh, you don't want me to do this, right? That's how we get the word no to mean something. We have to connect those dots by actually giving her enough information to work with, telling her what we don't like as well as telling her what we like. So good luck, Taylor. I hope that kind of helps out. Let me know if you have any more questions. That's going to wrap up the podcast today. Thank you so much for listening in. If you haven't clicked that subscribe or that follow button, do so right now. New episodes come out every Wednesday, and you're going to want to check them out. You can follow me on Instagram at SpeakADogCast. Join me there every Tuesday for our Training Tip Tuesday. Find my YouTube channel at SpeakADogCast. Become a patron of the show today at patreon.com/SpeakADogCast. And if you love the show, if you love what you're hearing, do me a favor, scroll on down, give me that 5-star rating, or leave me a review. I want to thank my patrons, my pup supporter, Regula Wright, and my dog friend, Maureen Crossett. Have a wonderful week, and don't forget to get out there and walk your dog.